We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
It's been a great season for BGSU basketball, but after two straight losses, things seem to be on the slide. We'll talk about how to get it turned around, and we will revisit the 2009 MAC championship season with its best player, Nate Miller. That's coming up on episode 15 of the BGSU Ziggy Cast.
This is the BGSU Ziggy Cast from Learfield, your home for Falcons updates, interviews, previews, and highlights. Now, here is your host, Todd Walker.
Great to have you with us for episode 15 of the Ziggy Cast. My name is Todd Walker, and BGSU basketball's season is winding down. Just three league games to go. And unfortunately, right now, our Falcons are playing their worst basketball of the conference season. They've lost their last two games to go from a first-place tie to still controlling their own destiny to win the MAC championship regular season title and earn the number one seed for the tournament to now. And we just hope they hang on to a bye to Cleveland. Falcons are 11-4 in conference, which is a very strong mark, but all of a sudden, things aren't so comfortable, even though they're still in second place. They're two games behind first-place Buffalo now, which means BG will probably need to win out and get some help to get back into the number one seed picture. Also, Toledo's closed within a game of Bowling Green. Kent State and Central Michigan just two games back. So Falcons still have work to do to clinch a seed into the quarterfinals of the upcoming Mid-American Conference Tournament. BG will be hosting Kent State on Friday. They need to get it turned around. And with that in mind, we will welcome in my broadcast partner, Kirk Cowan, as we talk about all of that with BGSU basketball. All right, KC, this BG basketball team, man, if I would have told you coming down the stretch they'll be 11-4 and in second place, you'd have said hell to the yes, right? But boy, when two of the four have come here in the last two games, it's sort of cast a, I don't want to say a pall on what's been happening, but the team has played so poorly the last couple of games. I think people are starting to worry that they've sort of hit their peak and now can't get it back. Is that a legitimate concern in your mind?
I don't know so much if it's a concern. I know people are probably going to be thinking back to last year when the team struggled towards the end of the year. I just think, like you said, we've lost our wing a little. offensively, defensively. And right now it's just trying to figure out what did we do or what did we do early in the season to get us to 11-4 in conference play. And, you know, the coaching staff, the players as a whole has got to sit down and try to figure out what's gone awry the last two games.
Well, clearly this team has lost its edge defensively. They were surprisingly, from what we had seen early in the season, once we got into league play, they were forcing a good number of turnovers, but they didn't do it by pressing or trapping even in the half court. It was just good, solid defense leading to turnovers combined with strong rebounding really made Bowling Green formidable. But defense and rebounding are two things that depend a lot on focus and desire and hustle and drive. And both of those things have suffered lately. And this team's got to rediscover that edge, Casey. I guess, you know, it's not that easy, right?
Another word I'll add to that list that you just mentioned is just energy. You know, it's something we spoke about last night. We didn't come out with the energy to match Miami. I know you made mention it last night in the broadcast how the Miami bench was celebrating on every positive thing done on the court. And you looked over at the BG bench, and it's kind of where we were just kind of melancholy, just kind of low-key, you know, not really sure of ourselves. You know, so we've lost our energy, I think, at the defensive end. We were so good at playing teams and guarding teams. When they make a pass, we're there on the catch. We're there on the pass. And I thought last night we did a lot of ball chasing. What that means, you know, they were making a pass and we were one guy away. We were running over to help, and then they would make the next pass and it led to a wide open shot. So we just got to find back our energy at the defensive end. Our communication, I think, is lacking at the defensive end. And those are things that we need to get working again to going down the stretch to try to finish out the season on a high note.
Yeah, and you're right. I think when I think about it now, really the boost that BG was getting from the bench brigade and mainly Mike Laster and Antoine Lillard, who seemed to take the speed and the energy up a notch when they came in, that's been missing of late. For Laster, maybe it's just sort of hitting that late season wall. He's a first year guy. He's been playing in junior college, so maybe it's just a little mental fatigue, but I'm not sure what to say about Antoine Lillard. You know, he's a senior, and he's been so good in that role until the last few games. Have you noticed those two guys just not quite the same zest?
Well, I'll tell you what. Mike Laster, you're right. It's not been the same as it was earlier in the conference play, earlier in the year, but he's still coming in, still doing a good job of pushing the tempo, pushing the basketball, guarding. You know, he picks up full court guarding his guy. The one that I've really noticed it's been Twan coming in the games. He just doesn't seem as focused as he's been. That energy hasn't been there. You know, so I it's hard to tell. You know, we know these guys from a basketball aspect. It's hard to tell what's going on off the court or in the classrooms because they are student athletes. But he's the one that it strikes me the most. It just doesn't seem to be locked in, and he's a young man that we need to be locked in every night to be focused and be ready to play, because I think when he is that way, he's one of our best defender, best on-ball defender, best all-around defender we have on the floor.
Now, the other thing, KC, that's been a bit up and down is DiMaggio Wiggins' play as it pertains to his offensive effectiveness, and sometimes defensively he's also had some slippage there. For a senior, his play has been very uneven, I think. Is that a fair criticism?
The offensive side of it, definitely. I think defensively for Maj down the stretch, he's being forced to guard a lot of guys that, you know, can put the basketball on the floor and make a move, shoot the three-point shot, and that's a little out of his comfort zone. So it's a little hard, you know, to totally put that on him. Do I think he's capable of guarding those guys? Yes, and, you know, he probably doesn't put as much energy, much emphasis into it like I would like to see him, you know. But at the defensive end, he's still rebounding for us, which is a good thing because he's one of the few guys that is on the defensive board every time that there's a shot up. But at the offensive end, you're right. He struggled last night. You saw it with Miami. they, in the early stages of the basketball game, they allowed him to catch that ball at the top of the foul line, at the top of the arc. And, you know, they weren't guarding him. They were just, hey, we're going to give you that shot all day. And, you know, it's just not in his game yet to step up and knock that shot down. And then even down in the low post, sometimes I still think he's trying to draw a foul too much, where he just needs to go up, shoot the ball, you know, make the goal. He needs to worry about making the shot, and if there's a foul, there's a foul. Right now, I think he's worrying about the foul more so than making the shot.
Talking BGSU basketball here on the Ziggy Cast. My broadcast partner, Kirk Cowan, is with me, and this Bowling Green team, again, we all have recency bias. I mean, this team's lost two in a row, so we're all woe is me. But in the big picture, of course, the team is 11-4, and that's a good conference record in any season. Clearly, the chance to win the conference regular season is almost out of the question now. Buffalo's two games ahead with three to go. Be that as it may, this Bowling Green team now just has to get back playing well before the tournament gets here. Now, for the coaching staff, clearly Coach Huger last night was frustrated in the post game. Talked about how the defense has been atrocious the last two games. But when a team kind of loses its focus or its edge or its energy, KC, I don't know, what can coaches do to try to get that back? You almost can't force it. It almost just sort of has to happen from the player's perspective, right?
Well, it's not something that Coach Huger is going to be able to force onto the guys, but it's something that you're probably going to have to just focus on in practice. You know, maybe you don't run in your next few practices. You're not going to go over your offensive sets as much, but you're going to harp on the defense. You're going to, hey, this is where we need to get back to. This is what's going to get us back in the winning side of things. You know, you just build on that defense. You try to get them into that defensive mindset that, you know, this is how we got to 11-4. This is what we've been doing. You show past games of good team defense. And you just remind them of what we were doing that made us successful early in the season. And you hope that they pick it up and realize, hey, you know, coach is right. We were communicating better. We were working together as a unit while we were on the floor. The guys that came in off the bench, they brought the energy that we needed when they got in the game. So, you know, there's different ways to just slightly nudge it at them without, per se, forcing it on them to try to get back to where they were defensively.
You know, another thing that could be factoring in here, Casey, is Bowling Green's the hunted the last couple of weeks, and they never were there before. You know, since they beat Buffalo, this team's been the hunted, and that's a different mentality. And it just seems the last couple of weeks, last couple of games, and even maybe the last couple of weeks, the mental focus has not been there. Could that be a product of now taking everybody's best shot and really there truly are no games off?
You're right, Todd, and I haven't even thought about it that way. It's been a while since we've been the top dog in conference where everyone's, you know, circling their calendar. Okay, we got BG coming in this day. So I'm sure there's a lot of teams that, you know, they're a little bit more focused. They're preparing a little harder because, you know, they got the top team coming in. So I'm sure that's the case, you know, guys. And you know, whenever you have a underdog playing the favorite, they're going to come and they're going to play a little harder. And I think that's kind of some of what we saw last night with the energy and the reactions from the Miami bench last night, is that those guys, you know, hey, we're going to try to knock off one of the top teams in conference, even though our season is not going as well. So that's definitely a factor. And you know, I don't know if our guys are, I hate to say, cracking under the pressure, being in such a top spot in conference. I would hope not, because, you know, this is why they play. This is why they go out and practice, lift weights in the summer. So they should relish the opportunity of being in the tops. Well, not right. We're not anymore, but one of the top teams in the conference. So, you know, maybe I hope it's not that they're cracking from the, you know, having some pressure on them, but, you know, I do see where teams are going to be giving us their best shot every night out.
Yeah, it's a different sort of anxiety every game to be the hunted, as I've termed it here. So now there's a chance to, with each ensuing game, to get back on track. Kent State comes in. Bowling Green really played well over there and handled Kent State. Now, coaches talked about how this team tends to believe it's press clippings from last time they played a team. And hopefully they don't think it's going to be easy again, because we all know it's not going to be with Kent on Friday.
Yeah, that's so true. We can't worry about what we did in past games. If that's how we do, then I would say, you know, I'm not looking for us to have a good game against Kent State. But, you know, that's not the case. We played well at their place. They're going to come in, and like I said before, you know, they are coming in with the mentality they're trying to knock off a top team. So we have to come out and we got to be ready. We got to be ready mentally. We got to come focused, and we got to have the energy, because it's all Kent State's always a high energy, a very aggressive ball club. So we got to be ready to match that intensity and play the way that we're capable of playing on Friday night.
Also, KC, this team seems to be way too three happy of late. The overtime game, overtime period at Ohio, they went 1-for-8 on threes. The other night against Miami, took 28 overall, made only 8. This team has sort of relegated itself to being three reliant, and that's a tough spot to be in.
Definitely. And the 3-point shot in the game of basketball is a great shot when you're on, and it can be your worst enemy when you're not making them. And I remember you said last night we were rated as the top making 3-point team in conference. And I don't know if that's why we now decided that that's going to be the focus of our offense. And I'm sure that's not a coach's decision, but that the players are out there and they're getting threes or taking threes, excuse me, but there are good 3-point shots and there are bad 3-point shots. And last night, I think we took a lot of bad 3-point shots, a lot of one pass contested 3-point shots. I've always said that we can get that shot anytime if we move the basketball around. I don't think we forced Miami to play any defense last night. We were one pass shot off the dribble shot. You know, we really didn't make them play any defense, so we just need to realize that there's good 3-point shots and bad ones, and we got to stop taking the bad ones. I like it when someone makes a move, penetrate, kicks it back out. That's a good shot. We get a touch in the post, collapse the defense, kick it back out. Those are good 3-point shots. Those are the shots we need to take instead of the one pass, quick 3-point shots, or the contested ones.
Kirk Cowan, always great to visit with you. Now, I've got Nate Miller coming up here on the Ziggy Cast. And of course, he was the best player on that 2009 MAC championship team, the last team to win a conference championship for Bowling Green. And, you know, in the last 20 years or so, Bowling Green basketball has had a lot of down years. And I think this 2009 team, even though they did bring them back a few weeks ago for a 10th anniversary thing at Stroh Center, this team has largely been forgotten, and its MAC championship has largely been forgotten, and I think that's a shame.
You're right, and it was due to a down period for Falcon basketball, and you know where we weren't getting the notoriety like we normally do. But we had some great players on that team, some guys that really worked, like you said, Nate Miller. Probably one of the hardest working guys that's come through the program here. Eric Marshall, that was also on that team, Joe Jakubowski, Scott Thomas, Otis Polk, just really good basketball players and guys that worked at their craft. And, you know, they were good Falcon basketball players. And, you know, like you said, unfortunately, it's kind of the forgotten MAC championship team, but, you know, a team that I thought had really good pieces and really guys that were good Falcon players.
Well, maybe on this 10th anniversary of that, this Bowling Green team can end the even longer drought of making the NCAA tournament. All of that yet to be determined. 3 games for Bowling Green to try to get their mojo back, so to speak. Kirk Cowan, always great to check in with you. I'll see you at Stroh Center on Friday.
I'll see you then, my man. Have a good one.
Appreciate KC taking time out to visit with us. Again, BG Hoops stumbling right now, hopefully can get back on track Friday when they host Kent State. Several weeks ago at Stroh Center, BGSU welcomed back the 2009 MAC championship team. Several of those players were able to come back, including Austin Calhoun, Scott Thomas, Otis Polk, among others, Eric Marshall, Matt Carafa were there. I think those were the only ones that made it back. But one guy who couldn't make it back, who was the leader and the best player on that team, was Nate Miller. Since 2009, his senior year at Bowling Green, he's been playing professionally all over the world. He's currently in South Korea, and we were able to recently catch up with Nate Miller, and I decided we would just go back to the beginning. You didn't start at Bowling Green coming out of Springfield South. You ended up going to UNC Wilmington and then later came to Bowling Green for your last 3 years. Talk about your recruitment, how you ended up at Wilmington and then came to Bowling Green. Just go through that time for us.
Well, so when I was coming out of high school, Bowling Green had recruited me pretty heavy with Coach Dockage. He had made it a point that he wasn't going to assign a recruiting coach to me. He was going to come and recruit me himself because that's how much he felt that I meant to his program. With that being said, like, you know, I had probably my senior year, I probably had about at least between 25 and 30 different offers between basketball and football. So, you know, I kind of had been around, I had in-state schools, out-of-state schools. I had a lot of schools that I had their attention. So, you know, Coach Dockage was one of the coaches that the head coach was actually my recruiting coach. So from there, I thought that that was pretty interesting in itself. And, you know, so my last five visits came down to Bowling Green, UNC Wilmington. I was going to go to Akron. I think I was going to go to St. Joseph's. And I don't even know if I remember my fifth visit. But long story short, I went to Bowling Green first. Actually, I went up there after a football game that I played really well. And I actually had about like six touchdowns because Dockers came to the game. And, you know, like when I got there, you know, like the football coach was even interested in me. So that was one of my stipulations. I didn't really want to play football in college. I did, but I didn't. And, you know, like that was one of my reasons for going to UNC Wilmington is because they didn't have a football team, because it seemed like every school that I was going on visits or wanted me for basketball, the football coach was always included. So I went to – my first visit was Bowling Green. I had an amazing time. I seen a lot of familiar faces. A lot of my friends from back home in my high school had attended there, a few for football, a few just for academics, and then a few guys from the Dayton area that played basketball, such as like Steve Wright, Ron Lewis from Columbus. Raheem Moss was also from Columbus. So I had knew those guys, and I knew those guys went there. So I had a great time on my visit. And my second visit – was UNC Wilmington. So that's a total different atmosphere. You know, Bowling Green is in Ohio, so I pretty much know the weather and the atmosphere, how it's going to be from summer, winter, spring, summer, and fall. And then I go down here to North Carolina to where it's like right on the beach. The weather's always good, you know. So it was really something that not – well, I've seen it before because due to travel, but like I never lived it, you know. And I got down there at the time. The team was like top 25 in the country. They was coming off a season to where – they had just beat USC in the NCAA tournament, and they had a couple guys also from the Dayton area, John Goldsberry, who went to Vandalia Butler, which was in my conference, and then a guy by the name of Beckham Wyrick, who went to Cincinnati Roger Beckham, which was the team. He was on the team that beat LeBron James in the state championship. So, you know, I went down there, and, you know, they told me big things, and, you know, it was kind of like a mid-major level, but they was kind of right there on the brink of being high major, and you know, because of the situation they had played, that it was an area where North Carolina Chapel Hill was, Wake Forest, North Carolina State, Duke, all those schools was in a two-hour radius. And like we played with those guys a lot when I was up there in the summer. So, you know, that was my second visit. You know, the coach really wanted me. You know, he said he was only bringing in two guys and we had a chance to play early and the team was going to be really well. But the deciding factor for me to decide to go ahead and commit to UNC Wilmington was the academic lady. She met with me and my parents were like sold on everything that she said. And my parents was like, we think that this is a great place for you. You know, it's kind of like mid-major, the same as it would be in Ohio with Akron or Bowling Green or Miami, Ohio, or, Ohio, you know, whatever school that would be. So it would be like, it would be a similar situation if you came down here, but with a bigger opportunity and you would be broadening your horizons. So, you know, I kind of, you know, when I was coming out of high school, I definitely valued what my parents said. You know, they helped me get to the point to where I was at that point. And so I didn't even take my last three visits. I ended up committing on that Sunday before I left there. And, you know, I got down there. So I actually graduated high school when I was 17. And we graduated, I think, was it April or May or whenever high school graduation is. So right away I went down and I started college courses. So I had like 6 credit hours before I even turned 18. And it was down there. It was adjustment for me, you know, like waking up in the morning, just doing stuff. You know, I'm down there for basketball and school. And, you know, the work, I've always had a work ethic, but, you know, like it's just a whole different level at that high level at NCAA basketball Division I. So I got down there. I got off to a nice, a rough start. You know, I had faced a rough patch in my life to where it was pretty tough for me to leave and go away from my family. But I ended up managing and I got down there. So by the time the season started down there, it didn't really go as planned or how I thought or how I really wanted it to go. So being a young kid, I started to search for answers of why things weren't happening the way that I wanted them to. And obviously, if I knew what I knew now, then I would have knew some of the things that were going on. But at that time, I had never set the bench. You know, I had always been one of the main players on every team I played for, and it was kind of humbling for me. And at that age, I wasn't really ready to handle it. So I started reaching back out to some of the schools that recruited me. And the first school, when I reached out to Coach Dockett in Bowling Green, like, it was immediate, like, we want you to come here. If you come here, everything will be, like, we want you here, you know. So I ended up deciding to transfer in January of my freshman year. And when I transferred, I went right to Bowling Green and I enrolled. And ever since then, it was I was at Bowling Green, you know. When I got there, it was a losing atmosphere. And, like, it was just a lot of things that I didn't feel that winners done. I came from a winning high school program. I went to a college that was a mid-major school, but they were top 25 in the country. So when I got to Bowling Green and seen some of the things that I seen, it was a little bit different. And I'm not saying that to make it a knock on Bowling Green or anything, but the moral to the story is that changed by the time I left. So, you know, I got to Bowling Green, you know, we had some pretty good guys come in. And, you know, I had a redshirt year, so it was kind of tough for me to be able to practice every day but not be able to travel with the team and play. But it ended up working out for me. You know, me and Coach, midway through the year, my sophomore year, I was able to take the floor. We didn't have that good of a year my sophomore year, you know, but I got back playing and I was excited about playing. You know, it was a real, real big lead up to me getting back on the court. And like I said, we didn't have as good a season as we wanted to, but that led to my junior and senior year. To both of those years, we got better and better to end up being MAC champions when I was a senior. So Bowling Green definitely, like, taught me a lot of lessons, you know, and on and off the court, you know, I was a lot closer to home. My family was able to come and see pretty much every home game and a lot of away games, being that they were a lot of them were in Ohio because of the teams we play. And it was just a different experience for me. And, you know, I came into a situation to where I was demanded to lead right away.
The program had sort of taken a downturn, as you mentioned. So the year that you sat out was a year with only 9 wins. Then the year you come back, things were going well. You were 10-4. And you won the MAC opener over Buffalo. Martin Sammarco hits a shot fading away in the corner to win the game. And, boy, things feel like they're getting turned around at that point. And it was a disaster the rest of the way in Coach Dockett's last year. But kind of take us back through that season when things started so well but then kind of fell apart.
So, yeah, well, we got off to a good start, like you said, and due to Marcin Sammarco, that's one of my great friends. You know, I've got a lot of lifelong friends from Bowling Green, and he's doing well still overseas, so I just want to give him a little bit of a shout-out, still playing overseas and living his dream. But Marcin Sammarco had 2 great years for us as he transferred in from Schoolcraft Junior College. He led the MAC in scoring his junior and senior year. But even for him, you know, his junior year was the year that they had 9 wins. And he did a lot of scoring, but I'm not really sure that he understood what it took to be a leader on the team, you know. And senior year, you know, his senior year, which would have been my year when we started off 10-4, he started to understand a lot more, you know. But as the MAC's conference was pretty good that year, you know, and we did beat Buffalo, and it kind of did go south, but we competed. We were in a lot of games, you know. We just weren't able to pull out a lot of them down the stretch, but we competed, and we knew that we had a chance moving forward because we did have a young core. Because if that year, I think we only had 2 seniors, which was Martin Sammarco and Matt Layfield. So we knew that moving forward that we had a good chance. We weren't. There were some games that got out of hand, but we were pretty much in every game. And, you know, we worked. You know, one thing for sure, you knew it with Coach Doc is we was going to work. Win, lose, or draw, you was going to work, and you was going to have to compete. And if you compete and you defend, you're going to have a chance to win every game. So we took that atmosphere. We took that environment and atmosphere onto the and kept it with us as we moved on from Coach Dockett to Coach Orr. But about that season, like, it's, to me, it was a success for me and the core guys that were with me there, which would be Daryl Clements, Brian Moe, and Eric Marshall, guys like that, because we were kind of young still. But we were right there on the brink of winning, and we didn't. And we wanted it so bad that we even came back after that to work harder to get better and better.
We're talking with Nate Miller here on the Ziggy Cast, the key member of the 2009 MAC champions. And the coaching change was made as the school parts ways with Coach Dockage, and then they bring in Coach Orr. Before we get into the basketball seasons that followed, talk about that transition and how the team took the departure of Coach Dockage and the hiring of Coach Orr. What do you remember about that time?
Yeah, so I remember, like, when we weren't when Coach Dockage had resigned or got they made the change, and I just remember that, you know, we were a lot of the guys, we were campaigning for Coach Lamonte Stone to come in and be the coach because he had been with there through our career. And he had a good rapport with Bowling Green, but obviously that didn't work out. And he was still on the staff with Coach Orr. So I remember when they said that Coach Orr had been hired and they were bringing him in. And I knew Coach Orr. I didn't really know him personally, but I remember in high school, like he was at, when I was in senior high school, I got invited to a camp down at Seton Hall where he was coaching at. And I just and I knew that he was from Cincinnati, and I kind of knew a little bit of his background. So with him being from Ohio, me being from Ohio, he knew about, you know, where I came from, my high school background, and a lot of things about me growing up. So Coach Orr came in, and one of the biggest differences, like, from Coach Dockage to Coach Orr, everybody know that Coach Dockage was a real fiery guy. From a lot of people know him as Baby Bobby Knight. And, you know, he was always on us. And Coach Orr had a total different aspect on it. You know, he kind of came in and he was a lot more laid back, but he still demanded the best out of it. He was a real religious guy. You know, we did a lot of things different ways. So I feel like for a lot of us, it took the pressure off of us as being, like, I don't want to say like beat down or, you know, whatever the case may be, but it was just a relief that we didn't have that fiery guy on us all the time, you know, as in Coach Doc is being really fiery with us. We were losing as well, so it didn't get any easier. If anything, it got harder. So with that being a release, I felt like guys kind of settled in a little bit more, were a little bit more comfortable and confident. Along with Coach Orr came Coach Jackson, George Jackson, who definitely helped out big time tremendously with a lot of us, with giving us confidence and making us believe that we could compete with anyone. So my junior year, we did pretty well. We had we started off so-so, and we were 50-50 throughout the whole season pretty much. We had our highs and lows, but at the same time, it was kind of unfortunate for us because we were learning a new system, you know, and we weren't considered young, but we had 2 years left. So I think it took us a while to learn the system. But by the time we learned the system and we got comfortable with everything, I feel like later in the season, we were better off.
Well, clearly the highlight of that first year under Coach Orr was the game at home with Kent State. They were rated in the top 25. It was the same night that they announced the Stroh Center would be a reality, and you guys went out and beat Kent State. Ended up being your last win of the year, as it turned out, but a memorable night at Anderson Arena. What do you remember about that night?
Man, I can remember that night that, first of all, it was pretty intense from locker room to locker room. If you know Anderson Arena, you know it's a small arena, and the locker rooms aren't too far from each other. Kent State came in, and I'm sure that they were feeling themselves a little bit. I think that was right after the bracket buster. I think they had just beat if I'm not mistaken, that's when Patty Mills was at St. Mary's, and they had just beat them. And they were Al Fisher was having a crazy junior year, JUCO transfer to Kent State, and they were coming in. They were really feeling themselves, and they were pretty much trying to take over like our gym, and like they were just going to come in, and we were going to bow down to them. And it started with the coaches. You know, the coaches heard all the things that they were, you know, all the fiery and hype that they was coming with, and they was just like, you gonna let them come in your house and do all this, and everybody, it was just a very good atmosphere, very good atmosphere. Competitive juices got the flowing. We went out there and we played a very tough game. I remember probably about 12 minutes left in the game, we were down maybe one or two, and I remember hitting back-to-back threes and getting a steal on Chris Singletary and getting to the rim a couple of times and finishing. And they were like, they knew that they were in for a dogfight. We always played Kent State tough at home every year that I was there, whether we won or lost. But they knew that they were in for a dogfight after that, and we were able to pull it out down the stretch and get a big time win, probably my biggest win. Maybe not my biggest win, but the biggest one of my junior year for sure.
Talking with Nate Miller here on the Ziggy Cast. He was, of course, one of the standouts on the 2009 MAC Championship team. He was named first team all-conference in that 2008-2009 season. So the win over Kent State was really the highlight of that 07-08 season. You go 7-9 in the MAC, and the next year you come back, and Coach Orr's second year, you and Daryl and BMO, now seniors, and I think going into that season, probably not a lot of people were talking about Bowling Green being a contender necessarily, but I think from what you've been saying, I suspect you guys thought that you could make a move as seniors. Take us back to that time and the mindset of you and your team going into that season.
So that summer, like, we all bought in. That summer, it was a tough summer for me. Personally, I had a few run-ins with the coaches, on and off the court, you know, and I had to make a decision whether I really wanted to be a part of the team for my senior year. And, you know, Coach Orr held me accountable. He told me that I was a leader on the team, but if I was going to be a leader on the team, then I needed to lead the right way. So we all sat down and talked with each other. We had we all bought into the concept of all we wanted to do was win. You know, we were all in it for one goal. But not only did we have me, BMO, and Daryl were seniors, but we had a good group of juniors, which at that time was Otis Polk, Mark Larson played a big role, Ryan Sims. So we were an older group now. We had a lot of guys that played for – oh, we had some very good – oh, Chris Knight was also there, who was a big piece of our team. And we also had a couple of freshmen who were pretty good. I mean, I'm sure you remember Scott Thomas. He came up huge for us as a freshman, and he's also continuing his career overseas at this point. But by now, we had everything in place. We had the seniors that we needed that were leading the right way. We had juniors that were following. So the freshmen couldn't do anything but fall right behind them. So by then, we had bought into each other. And even that season, we started off kind of so-so 50-50. And we got we even started the MAC off, I think, 1-3, actually. And then we ended up 11-5. We went to we had a patented 2-3 zone that we started to run, and we started to defend really well with Otis and Mark holding down the middle of the paint. And we just laid our hat on defense and competing. And, like, we kept ourselves in a lot of games because we defended at a high level. And, you know, Coach Orr and Coach Jackson and Coach Orr relied on me to make a lot of plays for not only for myself, but for my teammates as well. And I came up big, and my teammates came up even bigger for us in a lot of games for us to end up winning the MAC regular season championship.
Yeah, you're right. The team did indeed start to 1-3 in MAC play after beating Buffalo. They lost at Kent State, lost at home to Akron, and lost at home to Miami. And I think as I look back through things, the first win thereafter was a game at Ohio, 52-51. That kind of turned it around for you?
Yeah, turned it around for us. They gave us the confidence we needed. I don't think in my 3 years at Bowling Green, I don't think we had a game at Ohio at the Convo Center, even within 10 to 15 points. Like, I feel like every time we played there, we got blown out every time. But for some reason, that game was the turning point of our season. We went in there, we won a big one in there, and from there we didn't look back. That season, I think we swept through the MAC West, except I think we might have had one loss at Central Michigan, maybe. And that was a game that we kind of overlooked, I think, because we were fooling ourselves because we were winning a lot. But we swept through the MAC West that year, and we beat everybody. We beat everybody on our side at least once, if I'm not mistaken. No, we lost to Miami twice. But, yeah, man, we just came together as a unit, man, and it was just the confidence was there. Like I said, we had the leaders in place, lead by example, and everybody else followed along, and we just competed on a nightly basis and end up becoming the MAC regular season champs.
Yeah, you won six in a row and then lost at home to Eastern Michigan. But after that, you got back on track. And when you come down to the end of the season, it's the final game of the season at home against Ohio. And you need a win to wrap up the number one seed. And, boy, you demolished Ohio that day. Really a high point, a culmination of the season. Everything went well that day, and you won the conference championship. Take me back to that day.
Man, I can remember the anticipation and the hype leading up to it, man. I'll never forget I had about four of my high school basketball teammates and close friends of mine who I'm still close with to this day. They knew what the situation, obviously, because they were keeping up with me, so they were coming down for the Sunday afternoon game. Obviously, my family was coming down. We all knew what was at stake, and it was something that Bowling Green had done in a long while. So everyone was excited about the opportunity. Everyone was excited about, you know, what it would be like to celebrate a MAC title in Anderson Arena because it hadn't been done in quite a while. So we came out and we jumped on Ohio from the beginning, and it got pretty ugly. If I'm not mistaken, we won by probably about 30, close enough anyway. And it was just a memory that I'll never forget, man. I got to celebrate with a good group of guys on my basketball team, and not only that, a good group of my friends that I grew up with coming back from home. So it was just amazing, man. I ended up having a really good senior year. You know, after that game, I was in the running for player of the year. Obviously, I think I should have got it because we won the championship, but I didn't end up getting it. But I made first team all conference along with a few other accolades that I received after that year. And it was just a blessing, man, a blessing.
Well, you indeed did win by 30-plus that day, 75-41. And unfortunately, in the tournament, you guys did not win, but you had the NIT berth in your back pocket because of the regular season championship. And then turned out to be the final game you played was a barn burner at Creighton in the NIT. You guys came up just short, but that was a whale of a ball game that day in Omaha. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember, first of all, the festivities leading up to it. You know, Bowling Green hadn't played in a postseason tournament since, I don't remember the exact date. But, you know, the NIT did a very good job, and Creighton did a good job at hosting us. And, excuse me, that arena over there was pretty an amazing atmosphere to where they had a lot of guys there. That team was pretty good that year, if I'm not mistaken. They missed the tournament by just maybe a game or two. We went out there and laid it on the line. You know, me being a senior, I was coming off of we lost to Akron in the semifinals of the MAC conference. And I remember that game we had a terrible first half. And I remember I think I had 2 points in the first half to end up with 29 with 27 in the second half. And, you know, I couldn't really be disappointed with that because me and my guys got chewed out at halftime and we went out there and laid it on the line, came up a little bit short. But we still made some achievements that Bowling Green had done in a while. We still had an opportunity to go to Omaha. And, you know, we went out there and we played a very, very good game. You know, we came up a little bit short. I think we lost, I'm not sure exactly by how many, but it was a well-fought game. And, you know, you win some, you lose some. But it was enough for us to be proud about within ourselves and represent Bowling Green as a university.
No question about it. That 2009 team ended up with 19 wins and was the MAC regular season champions, played in the NIT, BG's first national tournament appearance in 7 years at that point. So then, Nate, after the season was over, you had to start thinking about your future. First of all, I think you had your degree in hand by then. What did you end up with your scholastic situation at Bowling Green?
Yes, I graduated that summer with a degree in liberal studies from Bowling Green, and I wasn't really sure what I was ready to do in the workforce, you know, but I did know that I still love basketball and I wanted to pursue my dreams. I was fortunate because I had a few agents that had contacted me and told me that they think I could play at the next level. So I pursued the basketball and playing at the next level, and that took me to now me being in a 10-year career playing basketball overseas. I started off in Spain my first year, only to go from Spain to Israel for about 3 years. Israel for 2 years, and I went to Mexico and Argentina for one, back to Israel, and that led me here to South Korea. So I've been a little bit around the world, man. I've been successful. pretty much everywhere I've been. I've won a championship overseas. I've won Defensive Player of the Year. I've had about pretty much every accolade that you can have. You know, I'm just say I'm blessed, man. And I took advantage of every opportunity I have and I've had, and just blessed.
Nate, what's the name of the team that you play for now over there in South Korea?
The name of my team is called Seoul Samsung Thunders. Like I said, we were based out of Seoul, South Korea. This is my third season here, and it's not the best season. Not going the way that I would necessarily wanted to go this season. But like I said, you win some, you lose some. But we out here competing, trying to do the best that we can possibly do.
Nate, I'm sure folks would be wondering also about your personal situation, family. Are you married, kids, any of that? I mean, you've had a kind of a travel log career here, might not have time to form a family yet. What's your situation that way?
So I'm actually divorced. I was married. I have two sons. My kids were actually both born in Israel. So hopefully one day I'll be able to get them an Israeli passport. So if they want to pursue their dreams in the NBA, doesn't work out for them, that they can go pursue their dreams overseas. But I have a son, Nathan Miller III, that's 8 years old. And I also have another son named Boston Miller, who's two, going to be three here in April. So, yeah, I'm happy I got two boys. You know, I've been blessed in that situation. My boys are my world. And they traveled with me for a while there when me and my ex-wife were together. But we recently decided that we weren't going to be together in the last few years. And now she's back at home and taking care of them.
Nate, when you think about playing overseas, you've mentioned a number of guys from Bowling Green that have done the same thing. While there's a select few that ever make it to the NBA or play there for a long time, there's been a ton of guys play overseas for quite a long time, and it's quite lucrative and rewarding. It's been that way for you. So that's something that maybe we don't remember, I guess, always as Bowling Green followers, how many of you guys have done that and are doing it.
Yeah, you know, we definitely have a good rapport over here. You know, like Scott Thomas is playing at a really high level over here. Marco has made a long career for himself. Otis isn't playing anymore, but I also was out in Argentina at the same time that Otis was out there, and me and him, we were in two different leagues, but he was out there at the same time I was. I know that there's been a few other players that did a bit of a traveling thing with different teams going on tours and stuff to different countries. But guys like John Reimold and Josh Armisen, those guys are a little bit older than me. But those are some of the guys that I can remember right offhand. Lenny Mattella, that had amazing careers overseas that I hear about to this day. You know, I've met so many guys playing basketball, and you tell them where you went to school at, and they say, hey, maybe you know this guy or that guy. And I'm like, yeah, I know all those guys. And it's been an amazing thing for us in Bowling Green to be able to go represent not only ourselves but our university in a fantastic way.
Nate, also, obviously you've been playing pro ball since you graduated, but I assume you've been back to Stroh Center, if not for a game, at least to see it and to get a look at it. Do you remember the first time you came back and saw the new arena? What was your reaction?
Man, it was amazing. I wish I could have played it. And I actually, in 2014, I had a season-ending injury in December. I tore my Achilles, and I had came back home, and I had came to a game. I took my oldest son at the time. I didn't have my youngest son yet, but I took my oldest son to check out a game. I can't remember who it was against, but it was when the guy Rayshon Holmes, which is in the NBA now, he was playing at the time, and they were having a pretty stellar season. And I can remember that I went in the locker room after the game. It was a tough loss for him. I went in the locker room after the game. And, you know, my son's a kid, so he really doesn't know any better. But he seen my picture above the lockers in the locker room. And he just screams out like, Daddy, that's you up there, you know. And, you know, the coach was a little bit upset because they lost. But he couldn't do anything but smile because of how happy that the kid was that his father was up there, you know. So that was my first moment back there. I was actually there this summer, me and about six other guys. We had got together this summer and went back to Bowling Green just to hang out with each other, catch up with each other, and had an amazing time. We got to go into the arena again and tour the whole arena. The coaches and stuff were out on vacation, but we had a great time there. We had a lot of reminisced on a lot of memories and had a great time. But the arena's beautiful. I wish I could have definitely played in there, and it's It's I remember when they first started breaking ground for it. I remember when Mr. Stroh came and shook all our hands, and you know, there's a lot of memories, man, a lot of emotions from Anderson Arena to the Stroh Center. But I'm sure that there will continue to be good teams to come, just like they're doing really well now. I follow them. I have them on my ESPN app. I'm following those guys every day. They don't even know it, but I am, and I'm rooting for them every step of the way.
Well, that's great to hear, Nate, and clearly. You guys, yourself and that 2009 team are a team that deserves more accolades. I'm glad that they were recognized here a few weeks ago. Too bad you couldn't be there with some of the guys that were there at center court, at Stroh Center, back 3 weeks ago, I think it was. But we appreciate you joining us, taking time out of your busy time right in the middle of the season to be on the Ziggy Cast. Continued good luck with the Thunder there in Seoul. And hopefully we'll see you in Bowling Green sometime soon.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, I wish I could have made it back there for the ceremony, but, you know, my guys was there. I seen a lot of videos, and I'm sure they had a good time. And once a Falcon, always a Falcon, man. Roll along.
Man, that was awesome to catch up with Nate Miller for the Ziggy Cast. He's doing well there in South Korea, and we wish him the best moving forward with the rest of this season. And that 2009 team really doesn't get much love, and it deserves more respect in our BGSU history. A MAC championship is, of course, a great accomplishment, but to just the way the BGSU basketball history has gone, that time period, that team didn't get a lot of accolades at the time, and it's kind of gotten forgotten that during that time under Lewis Orr, they did win a MAC championship. And that team, in my eyes, deserves more props from all of us. And that is starting to happen a little bit now on the 10th anniversary of that championship team. And we thank Nate Miller for taking time to join us. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Ziggy Cast. Hopefully our next Ziggy Cast will be a preview of Bowling Green's quarterfinal MAC tournament matchup without a game on Monday to get to Cleveland. That's what we're hoping for anyway, shooting for our next edition of the Ziggy Cast as a MAC tournament preview. Until then, this is Todd Walker saying, I Ziggy Zumba.
Thanks for listening to the BGSU Ziggy Cast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review however you listen. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.